Welcome, everybody, for another episode of the Everything Horror Podcast. My name is Paul Doski, and joining myself to help conduct this interview, because this is going to be a little bit all over the place, discussing business and the horror genre related, is none other than the man behind the mask, Ken Artuz.
Hello, everyone. Glad to be here. And we have a special guest today. We have Timothy Shea and Don Shea, the founder and owners of DNT Publishing. Thank you for joining us today.
Thank you for having us.
Good to talk to you today, Ken. You too, Paul.
Yeah, it's always a pleasure. Ken reached out to me and was just like, hey, I got an author and like a publisher that you would totally want to interview, basically. And I'm like, okay. And then here you are. And we finally got to reschedule this, so I'm on board with this, and Ken is too. And without going into more further details, but let's hopefully just have a nice little conversation with everybody, because I can't wait to hear more about your business side for both of you, because, you know, with the new, trend with NFTs and digital purchases of this and that, it might be confusing at first, so I really can't wait to see or hear, in this case, like, what really goes into it and learn more about the platform. So I guess I'll start off the interview with both of you guys. Is what do you remember of how you got introduced into the horror genre?
Well, I'll let Dawn go first. She's the founder. She's the mastermind behind all this, so I'll let her get into that with you.
So I have been a horror lover all my life. I started watching horror movies when I was a little bitty thing. So as I got older, I got into reading, you know, Fear Street and Goosebumps and that kind of thing, and that slowly led over into, you know, Stephen King and those kinds of books. And about 5 or 6 years ago, I got into the indie horror community, and I had no idea this even existed. It was like something totally different to me. As I got more into the indie horror community, I saw how many authors there were that were needing an outlet, for lack of a better word, for their work. And so I originally started DNT to write my own book. And our first book that we ever put out was ABCs of Terror. And each letter of the alphabet has a story that's attached to it. So, like, for instance, in the first one, A is for Arachnid, was the first story. And so when I had originally started DNT, I was going to write a story for each letter of the alphabet for the book. And I was talking with an author friend of mine, and he suggested that I have other authors help me write the book. And I was like, I don't know what you mean. And he said, well, have other authors write stories for the book. And so he reached out to some people that he knew, and I reached out to some author friends that I knew, and it took off really quick. And next thing I knew, that we had a book. And so at first I was just, we're going to do strictly anthologies like that. We're just going to have different authors write stories. But about a year, close to a year into having DNT, one of the authors that had been in some of our anthologies reached out to me. And I actually, Timothy and I had a discussion the day right before this about publishing standalone authors. And Timothy was like, well, let's just think about it. We'll discuss it some more. And literally the very next day, Joshua McMillan, he's one of our authors, he reached out to me and he said, are y'all ever going to publish solo authors? And I just thought, I mean, what's the odds of that? We just talked about it. And then the next day he messages me. You know, I was like, this has got to be a sign, right? So we've been doing this for 2.5 years now. And we have tons of authors. We just signed a bunch of new authors for next year. And So yeah, it's exciting.
That's great.
I've just been here cheering her on the whole time. I started off just helping out and doing the books and things like that until I had the idea for the NFT.
That reminds me of when a little bit of your origin story, Dawn, when you had mentioned the part of the anthology, reminded me of the film scene, the indie film scene and the horror genre, in which all these directors got together to create one film, and it became a huge success. The ABCs of Death. It became a huge success. Uh-huh. Right? And then they came with the sequel. That's how popular it became.
we're putting together the fourth one now. ABCs of Volume 4.
Oh, geez. Just to touch on the subject real quick. Speaking of ABCs of Death, I will never forget F is for Fart, that one.
Yeah.
That was probably the most weirdest one yet out of the first one. And then the second one, I felt it wasn't like, I don't know, it wasn't as creative as the original, but at the same time, it did bring a whole nother ABC of Jeff to look at it in a weird way. I wish I could remember one of the titles, but I really don't, so that must mean I really didn't like it. But yeah, as Ken was saying, you had something similar.
Yes.
That's fantastic. To hear someone running with an idea and just going with your gut and creating a business model with that idea. Most persons have the idea and they start to ponder whether it would work, this and that, X, Y, and Z, and don't take the initiative to take it to the next level. Which leads me to this question. For our listeners out there who are unfamiliar with NFTs and blockchain technology, what compelled both of you to go into this platform to supplement your business model?
Like I said, I help handle the financial side. And as Don can attest, the end of every month, we do our author payments. And when we get to the Audible portion, I blow a fuse because the royalties we get from Audible are just absolutely ridiculous. First of all, when we list a book, they control how much it sells for. They personally set up a price for the book. Second of all, they let you know up front, they take 60%. What we didn't realize is that when members of their monthly subscription use their monthly tokens to download it to get a book, the authors get pennies on a dollar. It's absolutely ridiculous. And so when we do our author payments, I would lose my mind and because it don't feel right, because we see it from an author's perspective, and we want our authors to do well and to succeed. And the majority of them are just like us. They have 9-to-5 jobs and they write on the side. That's one of the things that makes them indie. But, and I know almost all of them would love to write for a living, but with the royalty structure in traditional publishing, it's almost unattainable. So it was back last October, I was having an episode doing our monthly, paying out our royalties. And I said, you know, we could just produce this ourselves, put it into an NFT. And, the NFT boom of last summer was kind of, waning down a little bit. And, I'd been a big participant in that. So, and I don't know why it took me till the end of summer to have this idea, but that's when it was. And I was like, we could produce this, publish through an NFT, And the, I mean, the royalties, you have secondary royalties, which is revolutionary for authors and publishing. We can provide so much more value on the, in this new medium in Web3 than anything that's available in traditional right now. And so we just started thinking of how we would do it and the kind of value we wanted to give. And that's how it was born.
Oh, geez. Well, I want to touch on your topic real quick about the Amazon thing. So I remember when I first wanted to self-publish my own stuff, and I would use an Amazon service, which I don't even, it's sort of around, but I think they like changed the name. But anyway, the point is to this is, so I was using CreateSpace, and when I was making the physical book, obviously they're trying to push you to do the Kindle. And, you know, at the time I was just like, well, I don't know anything about formatting or this or that. So I guess, you know, I'm just going to put it together, because I was assuming at the time that it was almost like the same type of file as a, as you would do a physical book. Boy, was I wrong. And, you know, it became a hassle to the point, as you were kind of talking about with the revenues and the royalties, that I completely took all my Kindle stuff down, just because it was just so, I don't know, it was so horrible. I felt like the process was not as great as maybe a regular ebook would be. So I kind of see your point there. And Amazon lately has just been hitting on the indie artists. And we kind of talked about this a few years ago with a couple people who had their film getting banned from Amazon, and they didn't know why. Like, they would just take them down randomly and this and that. Like, one film that comes to mind is Cherokee Creek. That came out in like December or so, and it never showed up on Amazon. And it literally took about 4 or 5 months afterwards for it to get up on Amazon. And the only reason why they never put it up to begin with was because of the opening scene, where they had the, for lack of better wording, like the burglars scene. It was basically the writer, director, and the other actor and producer that was like doing their robbery scene. But that is the only reason why the film could not be published on Amazon.
I remember that, Paul, quite well. And to touch up on what Timothy was talking about, just to clarify, so that way the everyone that's listening could take notes. So we're seeing a different revolutionary platform, Web3 NFTs, which enables indie artists, publishers, musicians, etc., to make income and recurring income on their own art with their own percentages, as opposed to publishing on Amazon or Audible and getting pennies on the dollar. So, Paul, what do you think about this concept here? What does this open your eyes to where we at here with NFTs?
As far as making the revenue, you mean? I just want to make sure I'm understanding you,
yes,
correctly.
As far as making revenue and being a content creator.
So it sounds like if you do it through NFT, you're going to see more in your pocket than you would using a big brand company. And in that case, I would say you'd want to make more money, because otherwise, what do you got to do? Charge more.
Precisely the point. Now, Timothy and or Dawn, for this next question, You delved on to the benefits of NFT, Web3, the blockchain. So for artists out there, how do you define this new feature for them, for creators, for artists? Is this something that's still on a controversial plane, or is it serves more pros than cons?
It's still a bit controversial. When we first announced we were going to be doing NFTs, attacks from people that don't like them, I'll just say, They came out of the woodwork. It was actually a bit shocking because I hadn't seen that before. I didn't know that was a thing, but I was in the middle of it, of NFT craze. So most of the people I followed all supported, and I just hadn't seen the vitriol and of the other side. But yeah, that was pretty shocking. And they actually got a couple of our authors to pull their contracts for this year. We were supposed to publish them this year, and there was two people that ended up, they pulled their contracts, and luckily we were able to fill those spots pretty quickly. But yeah, it was a bit of a shock. I'll let Dawn tell you from her view.
Yes, I had no idea that so many people felt so strongly or had such an adverse reaction to the fact that we were doing NFTs. But there was probably at least a week and a half, 2 weeks that I was constantly being bombarded with awful comments on Twitter. People saying all kinds of things about us. And our author that was actually doing the NFT, they were doing him the same way as well. Messaging him, it was just obscene, some of the stuff they were saying. So it was crazy, but you just have to kind of ignore them and go on. But it seems like it's kind of died down now. But for a few weeks, it was rough.
Now, most of the outrage came from the idea that NFTs are bad for our environment, and we understand that they do require a lot of energy to create and operate. But we also understand that, we believe crypto's here to stay, and these things will be created on the blockchain. NFTs are going to be a thing, and that's one of the reasons we chose Polygon. The Polygon network to mint. Their energy consumption is much lower, and we love that they're promised, which we all know how corporation promises are, but they are dedicated to being carbon neutral by end of year, and so we like that, and that's who we went with.
Thank you so much for that information. And for Paul or anyone else that is listening, a couple of key words that Timothy mentioned: Polygon and minting. There are many crypto monetary descriptions. You have Ethereum, you have Cardano, and in this case, Polygon. Polygon, there's a whole slate of information behind each monetary description. He also mentioned minting. Minting is when you have your assets on the blockchain and someone purchases it. When they make that purchase, they make that mint, you purchase your product and all the assets that come along with it. Now, Paul, I know that everything that we have discussed here seems very new to you. What are your concepts now with this new information on how to publish on the blockchain? I mean, this is just scratching the surface. You see, you heard the pros and the cons. What are your thoughts?
It's interesting, I guess. I got to still learn how to do it. And, I got to let the information basically soak in. But otherwise, this sounds like you just basically like you need with any project is the patience and the wisdom to fulfill whatever you want to make to put it out there. Like I was saying before, it's like you need to go where you're going to make the bucks. And with any type of platform, it's always best, if nobody has even said it yet, to even do your research on the company before putting your stuff up on their website anyway. So I guess I want to say, this is just all still new to me. And, that's why I'm saying, like, this is a fascinating conversation for me, because it's going to open up a new doorway to hopefully find more pros than the cons.
And with that, let's delve on. Okay, so we touched on the false information, the impressions that NFTs are a scam, they hurt the environment, the perception that it's a bad business model. But we can all agree that the same thing was said about the internet. We heard grandma tell us, don't go on the internet is no good. But when credit cards came out, I'm not going to use credit cards because people could hack your credit cards. Same thing with emails and so on and so on and so on. The point here is this is a new technology. It's so brand new. It's in the infancy stage. If you have a business such as DMT, has a publishing house, in the horror publishing house, unseen on the NFT community, they're the first to introduce this concept. Within a few years, they'll be the front runners of this concept. Why? Because you have big companies like Electronic Arts, Steam. They don't want to join the NFT platform for said reasons that they are stuck on that negative perception. But us as indie artists, content creators, musicians, they're having a great time. Now, that leads me to this question for you, Timothy and or Don. Patience, patience, patience. You and I, we've been in the NFT, we've been on Twitter Spaces, which is the prime platform for NFT promotion. Not Instagram, not TikTok, Twitter Spaces. How has it been so far having that patience to promote your business model and also generating the sales?
Twitter's been great. It's been slow. It's all about meeting people and getting yourself exposed, informing people that NFTs aren't just for art and video games and videos. But there will be many aspects and other for other creators as well to get involved and promote their work. We're bringing literary work. Literary projects are I'm finding more and more every day, which is very encouraging, and I love seeing it, seeing what they're doing, what angle they're bringing, they're trying to bring. It's really just exploring and meeting new people and just growing. And I've loved the experience. We typically promote through Twitter Spaces. There's lots of great people in there. Yeah, it's been slow growing, but loving every minute.
And in the Twitter Spaces and the Twitter platform, it is a slow boil. We've heard this many times that you get into NFTs. We've read this article many times. I've seen it in my feed. I'm sick of it. 13-year-old creates NFTs, becomes a millionaire. That's not true. That is not true, right?
Right.
Am I right, Timothy?
Right. Or yeah, it's just some projects do pop off. They just, you know, they got it in front of the right eyes and just, you know, they just blew up, and that's great. I'm glad people are able to do that. But for the majority of us, it's a grind, definitely. You've got to build your audience. You've got to you've just got to continue to get your work out in front of people. Keep informing them, hey, NFT books is a thing.
And with that, Paul, when you buy something at the store, what do you get behind it?
When you buy something at the store, what do you get behind it?
Right. Let's say you go to buy a pair of sneakers. What do you get behind it? What else do you get?
Probably socks and stuff.
if it comes along with it. I ask that question because, you see, this is the great thing about NFTs, and it's going to lead me to a question for Timothy and or Don. You go to the store, you need a pair of sneakers. You buy a pair of Nikes. That's all you're getting, is a pair of sneakers. Meaning Nike's not going to give you, hey, since you bought our sneakers, we're going to give you a pair of socks. or are we going to give you another pair of sneakers when it comes out next month? They don't do that, right?
No.
Okay. No. Timothy and or Don, with your NFTs, what are the utilities or the value that you're providing when somebody purchases the NFTs?
So that was one of the main things we wanted to really elevate when we had the concept. So typically when you buy a book off Amazon, like you said, you get the book, whether you get a physical copy through the mail a few days later, or you buy the ebook and download it and start reading. And then when you get done, you're done. It's just in your digital library. Well, the thing about NFTs is, and publishing through NFTs, we can give any amount of value as we can, and we want to maximize that. So what we're doing is, not only do you get the art of the NFT, but you also get the ebook. You get 12 months exclusive access to the ebook and the audiobook. So we added a bit of exclusivity to the NFT. After 12 months, the book will launch traditionally on Amazon and Barnes & Noble and platforms like that. But for 12 months, you have exclusive rights to that book, or exclusive rights to read it and, you know, own the book. As well as we include the cover art. We take all the text and completely off the book, make it in the cover artist. He puts his logo on it and we present it just as unlockable content for you to just download and do what you want with. That's yours. Then you can also, and that's what's revolutionary about this NFTs and this and Web3, is that when you get done reading it, it doesn't just sit in your e-reader in a digital collection. I mean, it can. I mean, above anybody else, I've got a massive collection that's just sitting there. But you can turn around and sell it. Now, when you do that, it's like the author sells another book. The next person, he gets all the rights and he can download the book or listen to the audiobook, and the author gets a royalty from that sale. And since these NFTs are collectibles, the value of them fluctuates, so you might make money off, you know, you might make a little profit off holding the collectible.
Thank you for that bit of information. So to provide context to that, Paul, I have to put Paul on the spotlight. He published a comic book. So picture this, Paul. You have your comic book. You put the cover of the comic book out there as an NFT. People download the comic book cover. They'll get the whole series for a month. I'm using the outline Timothy just offered. Not only that, but you could add anything else you want with that. And on top of that, if that person who bought it sells it, you still get money off of it. So the contrast with that on Amazon, I know everyone here listening has traded books. I bought a book, I'll give it to my friend. But the author's not getting money off of that.
Exactly.
Wonderful. Wonderful. We're in a time that artists cuts out the middleman, and especially in the horror genre. I love horror films. I love horror genre, everything. For this genre to prosper in this way, and even sci-fi, I got to throw in sci-fi, of course, to prosper in this way, it is revolutionary. Paul, thoughts?
Well, first off, I just want to make sure that people don't get the idea that I published the comic. So that I only co-wrote it. So I had no, I had nothing behind the publishing or anything. So when it comes to trying to get it out there, that is not me. But if I were to mention the self-published book that I've done, then I would say I would want to create more bonus content to what Tim was saying, so that way the readers get more than just the book.
Precisely. And Paul, let me tell you, DNT is the first publisher for horror that I've met on the NFT community. I've met musicians that have voiced the same frustration. Their songs are on Spotify, and they get pennies to the dollar on Spotify for each play. This very same musician released his music as an NFT with all the assets, and he put out a tweet stating that he made more money in 1 month than he would in a year with Spotify. So these are the benefits of, as an artist, I have to emphasize, as an artist, musician, writer, whatever, putting your assets out on the blockchain forever. It's there forever. And you have residual income coming in with each sale. But remember, as Timothy had mentioned, you have to put in the grind. This is not something that you're going to say, I'm going to make money overnight. It's a process. For me personally, from my experience, because I also have an NFT business, I wake up, get on the platforms, promote the business, promote until like 11 p.m., 9 a.m., 11 p.m. Why? Because you want to become relevant. You want to make connections, just like Timothy has mentioned. You want to go into the community, let them know who you are, what you present. You may not make a sale that day, but you could have the opportunity to collaborate. And with that, Timothy, has there been doors open for you with collaborations with other artists or musicians, whatever, on the NFT community?
Yeah. I've collaborated mainly with artists that just that do custom. I love meeting a custom artist. They all have different things they do. Shout out to Goof Troop. If anybody's aware of them, they did a custom piece for me. They really gives a theme, you know, works with the theme of what we represent, horror, and just brings that to their art. And that's always a joy to do, and see yourself in someone else's art, and be able to connect with them on that level. But also, we've met a few authors, and you know, we're talking, collabing, trying to get some collabs together. So yeah, it's just a matter of, you know, you got to get out there and meet people and expand. Not only are you adding to what you can give your community, but you're giving to other communities and just growing. And it's almost like a family.
So I got a question for both, all three. Well, I should say for all three of you in a way. So just out of my curiosity, my question is, what is an NFT, and what type of format can it be? So can it just be like, you know, like an image or a digital file, or can it actually be like video?
An NFT can be any of those things. One of the exciting things that we're finding, and I mean, really excited to be involved with, is, like I said, we've met several other authors and other literary projects. One of them is NFTbookstore.xyz. And one of the things they're doing is developing technology so that the NFT is the literary work. When you purchase it, you can interact and read it. No, you don't have to download. You don't have to, switch apps or anything. It works and you can read it. So we're really excited about that. I'm also, yesterday, I met a fella and we've been talking. He does documentaries. He's fixing to release, he does them in episodes. And he's fixing to release his first episode, and I can't wait to see that. He did a he did a free giveaway of NFT giveaway where it was the preview. It was about a 2.5 minute preview of what he's doing. And man, it blew me away. I can't wait to see what else he's going to be releasing.
Thank you for that info, Timothy. And to touch up on that, Paul, there's actually, to my friends, well, followers list, 4 in my list that I just looked over, they have short films, 4 NFT short films. Now, how does this work? A couple of them put as an NFT a clip, a video, a very short video. They sell that as the NFT. You purchase that NFT. What do you get? Executive producer. You get to help them make the film. It's just like Patreon, right? But you could have decision making with how the film would go. Of course, to a certain limit, because you don't want too many chefs in the kitchen. So they have that fixed out already. 2, you get your name on the film.
Well, here's a quick question about that. I think Brenton brought up Patreon, and I know everybody knows what that is, but in this case, you mentioned, like, you know, they can buy and get an executive producer to help make it. So does it almost work as Patreon as well, almost like a monthly subscription, or is it more like a one-time deal, done and deal?
Well, the best thing with NFTs in comparison to Patreon, let's say you didn't make your quota for Patreon. I don't know if it works as Kickstarter. I haven't seen it for a while. But if you don't make your quota, you don't get the money, correct? They still have that?
Right. So you set up a goal. So like when I did the Kickstarter campaign for both the, or let me rephrase that, 2 to 3 films that we are currently doing, because we are in the process of recording the last Terror Trail bit for right now for this year and get that out this October. So our goal at the time was I believe like 500, because I was also putting into effect of the Kickstarter fees and stuff like that. So I wanted to make sure I brought up the campaign goal amount as well, because even if we hit 500, we're probably only going to see, this is just a rough estimate, but I would say $325 of that. So that's like $175 more, more than the $250 that I originally wanted, if that makes sense. As far as, yeah, and then as far as Indiegogo, you can do both, right? So if you make your funds at the end of the campaign, you will get your funds. However, there's another option where if you make $100, you can receive the amount that you've gotten, even if you have not reached your goal.
Cool. Now, based on the information that Timothy has eloquently provided throughout this interview, and me interjecting with my point of view as well. Oh, you wanted to say something, Tim?
Yeah, I wanted to speak on that, on the Patreon. And this goes for Amazon as well. Amazon can censor what we list on their website. So if they don't like a book we want to sell, we don't get to sell it on Amazon. That's not a problem in NFT with Web3 and NFTs. Same goes for Patreon. They have been known to censor groups on their platform. And now, the purchase of an NFT, I mean, you could do it any way you want. I mean, you can release a new NFT and that each month, and that would be your entry fee, much like paying a subscription on Patreon. But the networks are decentralized, and so the exchanges, so you can, anybody can create a subscription service or a project that releases new content each month and be able to sell that through NFTs without the worry of, you know, being censored or not allowed to have their group.
I just wanted to say that I do know personally several indie authors that are friends of mine that have had their books removed from Amazon because of content.
That's crazy. Yeah, that just falls under the category that I was saying earlier with the films as well. They may not have flagged it the first time, but for whatever reason, they maybe changed their policy to what could be there. It's actually really sad of what Amazon does, even though they say they're a company that's supposed to help the people, if I may say. And it's just, you know, it's just ridiculous. And then don't get me started about how Amazon treats their employees either. But yeah, you know,
that's a whole different kind of worms right there.
Yeah, but anyway, what I was gonna, so what Tim saying, talking about centering on every the platform like Patreon and this and that. So as for the joke here, so I guess does that mean we need to go on OnlyFans or something? Is that the only way to make it so that it's not centered?
Well, I don't know about that.
Actually, about a year ago, we got involved with a platform. It's called godless.com, and it's an ebook platform. He only does ebooks, but it's called Godless because he does not tell you what you can and can't write. So basically, he does not censor anything. If you want to, you know, kill everybody, you know, that, you know, he doesn't censor anything in any of the books that he, that goes up on Godless. And, we put all of our books up there. Well, we have a kids line called Little Gremlins. We don't put that on Godless, but, all of our other horror books, we put them up. We usually have about 3 books a month up on Godless. And, yeah, it's just really great. And the best thing, not only that he doesn't censor the authors, he also, you get 90% of your royalties. I mean, and that's just crazy. That's, it's insane. But yeah, so it's really great.
So Paul, to touch on that, we covered the pros and cons of the NFTs. We covered that you could have full control of your media utilizing NFTs. So going back to your question, Paul, if you have a $500 a Patreon, Indiegogo, whatever, you're only getting $500. That's if you make the $500. But as an NFT, you could keep selling those NFTs, build a community, just as Tim has mentioned, because you're engaging with one-on-one with other artists or those who like your vision. You're building your community. You don't do that on Indiegogo or anywhere else. Not only that, residual income coming in. So if that person decides to sell, you're still making money in the long run. Let's say they bought it for $10 and they sell it for $30. Whatever percentages that you have for your royalties, you're getting that. You don't get that from Indiegogo or Patreon or Kickstarter. So these are the added benefits for any media platform, especially, I have to emphasize, horror, sci-fi, if you're into it, this is the place to be.
I'm gonna touch on that too. So I'm gonna flat out say, for anybody that creates should have at least 100% full control of their art, no matter what the hell it is. I mean, that's one reason why I went into the self-publishing. Yes, it's hard to promote your stuff yourself rather than having like a press release person that, you know, throws it everywhere and emails everyone that they can think of. But in this case, you know, I would rather have control knowing that what I made is not getting changed no matter what shape or form. It's not getting censored. Everything else, like I have an perfect example of this. So I remember when I first was starting to look into publishing a book, what were the pros and cons between self-publishing versus having your own publisher? So one of the things that I've learned is I remember getting a call one time for my third book that I was going to be releasing called Enemy of Everything. And the cover of that represented a white t-shirt with me basically splattered in blood, because basically the symbolism of that was going to be everything that got thrown at me with all the depression, struggles, fighting, happiness, whatever. It kind of wears and tears at you. So the blood is supposed to represent like all the battles that came and you conquered, or in this case, I conquered. And they specifically said on the phone that they wanted to change this and that. They didn't want to keep the idea of the book cover, even though I felt the cover had meaning to the Enemy of Everything. Does that make sense?
Yes.
So I guess what I would just say is, anybody that can have 100% over their own work is, you know, that's amazing. And if you can continue doing that with any type of platform that does not intervene, or maybe they just have a suggestion that, to you of what maybe you could do better or whatever, then by all means, I would take suggestions. But if you're telling me the only way you're going to back behind my project is by changing this and that and doing it your way, then get the fuck out of here.
Pretty much. Well, and with that, Paul, I'm going to circle back for a question for Timothy and or Dawn. We know that there's a negative stigma with NFTs and the crypto and blockchain. Have you personally, in your business model, done something from your end to introduce authors into the platform and provide that education so that way they could feel comfortable in going into NFTs?
Yes, when I approach an author, I first thing I do is gauge and talk to them about their knowledge or experience with crypto, as well as NFTs. Typically, so far, there's only been one that actually is involved in crypto. All the others, you have to educate them on. And I do it as detailed and thorough as I possibly can to give them a basic understanding, and then I explain NFTs and the potential they have, what they are, and all the great aspects they can bring to the author. So yeah, it's a bit of a process. It's some authors are receptive very interested, and then want to step back and, you know, learn more. Others are ready to go, and then some are just like, I don't like that, and I don't understand it still. So, you know, it's a process. We just signed our third author, so we've put out one book. I signed another. We're currently working on that. Now I've signed a third. So, you know, I'm thrilled. We've got three books in production for the NFT, possibly a fourth later, in talks with that fella. So yeah, the authors have to be brought in just as much as the fans, because it's NFTs are just, and what you could do with them, it hasn't reached the masses yet, as we all know. Authors just aren't aware of that option.
So here's a little intermission with comedy relief here. When someone asks you, Tim or Don, someone asks either of you, can you describe what are NFTs? In baby term simplicity, what's your definition?
Ooh, that might, let's see, baby definition.
I put you on the spot there. A digital project that you can somewhat own and pass along. while others still get paid, right? Is that good enough?
Well, the baby term, a lot of persons describe the baby term using the Mona Lisa. Let's say someone goes to the museum, they take the postcard or they take a picture of the Mona Lisa. Do they own it?
No. No.
Right. Who owns it? The museum. Why? There's only one. There's only one Mona Lisa in existence. For Timothy, he sells his NFTs. There's only one of those NFTs. So I hear this all the time. Well, why am I going to pay $50 for that? I could just right click and save it. Yes, you can, but you don't own it. You don't own all the assets that Tim is providing. You don't own the membership. You don't own the audiobooks or everything of value that he just described earlier.
So now, not to interrupt you, but just so I don't lose my train of thought here with what you're talking about. So basically, in a way, you're buying, I'm just going to say, call it a digital license. So that way you basically do own it.
It's not really a license. Each NFT is its own token. You own the token, and you own what comes with the token.
Right, but like, you know, with the real world nowadays, right? Like, if you want to use the specific font or this or that, you kind of quote need this license in order to have the commercial use of it and this and that. So in this case, the token, I would say, is almost like a license, though. Correct.
Well, behind the NFTs, there's a series of digits. I'm trying to place the simplicity. There's a series of digits on the blockchain. So in that digit, it will say, okay, Paul purchased Timothy's work, right? You own it. How do you know you own it? Because you purchased it through your wallet, a series of code, made that transaction. On that NFT, there's a series of code, so you own it. That's yours. That no one else, just like the serial number on the dollar bill, that's unique. That's $1 bill with that serial number. You own it. So to place the simplicity, yes. In a way, that how you describe, Paul, that's trying to provide that basic description, yeah.
Yeah, that makes sense. I mean, it just... You know, with everything becoming the way it is, if you know, there's a lot of new terms coming out with this, like the token aspect. So that's why I was trying to think of another term that people know to kind of paraphrase with the token. So license, token, you know.
Sorry to put you on the spot there, Tim, but usually someone when they have the platform with, hey, can you describe NFTs to me in baby terms? We're like, some people use the Mona Lisa, some people use dollar bills. I was so curious to know your definition.
I like to use the dollar bill's a good one, but I also like to use like a concert ticket.
Right.
But I don't consider that baby terms, so I was trying to come up with something else. but yeah, it's just like a concert ticket. If you're having a concert in your town, there's 1,000 tickets. You get one. Now, there's 1,000 tickets, but yours is special because yours is assigned to a certain seat in a certain area. And only you have that seat. That's what NFTs are. There are others in the collection, but you have yours, and yours entitles you to certain things.
That is awesome. There you go. That was easier than my Mona Lisa description. Now, next question, horror-oriented. Timothy, Dawn? We know NFTs is in its infancy. And within 1 year, where do you see not only your business model, but horror genre in general within the NFT community in comparison to traditional in real life business models?
Well, I hope it grows. I know I've had a few other publishers that I'm friends with have asked me about it. So obviously there's some interest in it. I think they're still kind of leery because of the lashback, you know, that I received. So, but I'm hoping that they see how ours does and how ours grows, and they will also decide to join and do it as well.
Yeah, I often refer to ourselves as we're cannon fodder. Everybody's sitting back watching what we're doing, seeing the pros and cons of what we do, ways to improve, things to avoid, things to include. Hopefully in a year, we'll have about a library of four books and be signing more authors. Growing our community, getting these books out to people. I just see the Web3 space growing and growing is what I'm seeing. And we want to grow with it.
Thank you for that. And out of curiosity, how long did it take the both of you to prepare this business model? Meaning, we have certain terminologies in the NFT community, but basically what it boils down to is the business proposal and the quarterly projections. How long did it take to write this all out and have this prepared?
Well, it started back last October, and really didn't get rolling until this February 2022. It was just a matter of, at first I wanted to release like a cover art NFT and to promote each book we do, and we do two books a month. So use a cover art, promote the book, and sell collectible NFTs promoting the book. But then I really wanted to add more value by adding some kind of exclusivity to the book and or the NFT with the book. So we went through, you know, more design and structure and all that. Finally, we got it down pretty good in January and really got to work. It took about 6 months just to get the idea. And we're still learning. We have plenty of ideas to add even more value to holders. I mean, it's just an ongoing process, to be honest. The only thing limiting us is budget at right now, you know, as it's budget controls a lot as well.
Yeah. Budget does become a problem. And speaking of like budgets and stuff, Don and Tim, do you guys not like on top of trying to do this business for you guys, your NFT business, but do you guys actually work your own jobs as well? Or how does that work? Like, are you guys just kind of doing it as a hobby and this is not really like a full-time thing? Like, I don't know if hobby would be the right word, but maybe like a part-time business aspect.
I am a REN full-time. I do work Monday through Friday. So, but I do D&T stuff on my lunch break, at night when I get home, all weekend. So, Timothy's a stay-at-home dad. He said we have 5 children, and 4 of them still live at home, and he homeschools the 3 youngest ones. So, I'm the only one that technically works outside of the home, he does the NFT stuff every day. And I do D&T as well. And so I guess some people would consider it part-time because I do have a job outside the home, but I consider it full-time because even if I'm out at work, if I have a break or my lunch or whatever, I'm always answering emails or doing what I can do from my phone to try to get stuff done as far as our books.
Yeah, I was a poker player for many years, and when I quit that, I did a few other things. But then I discovered, I discovered crypto, started teaching myself how to trade, and then in 2020, when COVID hit, we had already been discussing homeschooling the kids because we weren't very happy with what was some of the things going on, and that just brought them home, and we never sent them back. We've been homeschooling them ever since. Yeah, and then that's also the year Don started the publishing company, so that's been in the background pretty much every free minute we have, and then we added the crypto, and so I'm doing that full time. I tell you what, the last 2 years have been crazy and exciting as well, to be honest. If you had told me two and a half years ago or 3 years ago, if you said we'd be publishing books, I'd told you you're crazy. And if you added that we'd be in Web3 or crypto, I'd have tried to have you committed. So I'm proud of everything she's done. I can't, you know, so I have to ask myself constantly, is this real life?
Well, personally, I got to say from my point of view, I am proud of you both as well as entrepreneurs, as parents, and also focusing on the various aspects and real life things as well as this venture here. Because, of course, you and I know it is unstable at the moment. We are in a bear market. The value of crypto is crashing. But at the same time, this is what gives us calluses. Instead of going backwards, we have to move forwards and develop and keep developing, keep grinding and keep developing our business. Once the market comes back up, you see your business prosper in a positive direction. So, Paul, any questions from the horror aspects? I have a couple of questions left before we roll up the interview. Anything horror related from your point of view that you want to relay?
Honestly, I don't have any questions because I've just been listening to this because my focus has just been really learning more of this new field of NFTs. So I guess since you put me on the spot like that, I'm just going to say, so Don and Tim, between you two, because whether it be different tastes or maybe you guys have the same taste, but when you look for horror, what is the one thing you guys are always looking for in the horror genre?
Ooh, good question.
I always look for originality. I love something new, something different that's never been done before. You know, I think if you can take an original idea and still make it your own and terrify somebody, that's really what it's all about, you know. And I've told them before, you know, I don't mind old tropes like vampires, werewolves, you know, that kind of thing. But you have to make it your own. You have to make it something I've never seen before. You know, because there's hundreds and hundreds of those kinds of books. So if you're going to put that book out and you want to sell it, then you're going to have to make it something that somebody hasn't read 100 times before.
I think that about covers it. We want to put out the same quality work and with their NFTs as our traditional side. I have had to, like, we're not going to publish anything. I've given out just as many rejections as acceptance letters to. So,
yeah, that's fair enough. Yeah, that's fair enough. So what do you guys take, Don and Tim, about, you know, Hollywood and, you know, rehashing the same stuff over and over and over again? Like, example would be like, you know, they just redid Firestarter.
It's like the creativity's all gone. I mean, what's going on? Why is it nothing more than remakes? Or which the comp we have the constant comics, but that's the only. That's just taking what's already been written and you know turning it putting it on film. But I don't know. It's all the remakes. It's like where did the creativity go?
And not only that, but they're ruining movies.
Established
that were yeah. There was no reason to remake them to begin with, and you remade them, and you made a mess. So it irritates my soul, honestly, that they come up with something new. You know, I mean,
yeah. Where's the Wes Cravens and John Carpenters? Where are they? And the
they just want to produce now. They don't even want to go behind the camera anymore, from what I understand, but. Yeah, that's a good point. And I do feel like what you guys are saying is, you know, they're rehashing it again over and over, but they're trying to change a little bit of information, like, you know, Stephen King's Pet Cemetery. Like, you know, what did they do with that one? They basically swapped the genders of basically what happened in the original. Mm-hmm. I don't know. I'm trying to think of something else real quick, but right now it's like brain farting me because honestly, I'm just get sick and tired of hearing, oh, we're about to do this and that. And it's just like you said, where's the originality anymore? Like what is the new thing that can scare us? And honestly, I do find it hard of, well, what is there left? Because what hasn't really been done? But then you got to look at found footage. And this new technology stuff, and it's like, well, maybe we need to start focusing on like, well, what if the technology turns on us? And I'm not trying to make it sound like Terminator, but I'm trying to say, like, maybe this new technology that comes out, what if it ended up having a mind of its own, like an AI? All of a sudden now we have AI popping all over the place, and that might sound like Terminator all over again, but it's really not. Some of this stuff is like a program now where the AI will make you your project. Like a good example is, I don't know if any of you guys have heard about this. I don't have it in front of me, so I cannot tell you the title of it, but it's the very first AI made comic book. That's very interesting. And that looks like it's actually a horror comic as well.
But this is a conversation you and I have had many times over, and we've included many guests delving on this topic of remakes and the such. I favor originality. That this is what's going to propel the horror genre forward. Case in point, we have a lot of talented directors overseas with creative ideas from Argentina and France. They're redefining horror with extreme content. But of course, it does have a social commentary. It's not just blood and gore on the screen. There's a social commentary behind the film, what it's about. We could name so many, and we could find a good social commentary and talk about the psychology behind it. With the zombie genre, we've seen so many iterations of this concept, but it's certain films that have changed that concept. We have running zombies, you have infection, you have mold, you have all these ideas flowing. So it's good to see that D&T is actually favoring originality and content and putting that forefront. Not only is that good for the authors, but it's also great for horror readers. Hey, this is nice. Who's this author? All right, let me follow this author, and so on and so forth. And there you go. It was spread like wildfire.
I agree. In the horror, a lot of great horror is coming out of non-US countries right now. And there was one amazing movie we watched called The Sadness that was Vietnam from the Vietnamese put that one out, and then the zombie flicks from Korea, Train to Busan, and its sequel, they were amazing. There was Hashtag Alive was amazing. And I'll go here in the U.S. I'll give Rob Zombie as an example. When he puts out his own material, it's amazing. But then when he tries to remake Halloween, it's like, what is this garbage?
All right. So because you just said that, yeah. So since you just had to bring him up, so this is everybody's opinion. Just because of what you said, I'm pretty sure we're all in agreement, but I just want to put it on this record here is that. So what does everybody think about Rob Zombie doing the monsters? I honestly think Sherry Zombie should have stayed the hell away from this. But then again, it's Rob Zombie. He always has to have his wife in his goddamn movie somewhere.
I don't know how to feel about it. I grew up my whole life watching the monsters on reruns. Obviously, they weren't still on when I was growing up. But yeah, so... And I know the fact that he always has to cast her in every movie he does. But yeah, I'm worried, honestly. But I hope it's not a complete train wreck. But yeah, I've been seeing some of the behind the scenes of them making it. And I'm just crossing my fingers and hoping for the best.
Maybe he has a better chance with remaking comedy, adding that aspect to it. Maybe it'll, I don't know, hold up, hopefully.
Did you know another person that I think is really good as far as making original horror movies? I know some people don't particularly care for his movies, but Jordan Peele, I mean, he has good concepts. They're original and different, and you know, they're not, it's not the same old, same old. And I mean, I really enjoy most of his movies.
Yes. Those have been a breath of fresh air when they, as well.
I haven't had a chance to watch, his version of being the host with Twilight Zone. And I know his next film is called Nope. So already that he had some very interesting titles. So there's Us, I know, there's Get Out, now there's Nope. So I kind of like how he's also creating these weird titles that it's almost like if you go to search it, it's kind of hard to even find anything. You know, it's like sometimes it's like a band name even. Like they have like this weirdest name, but when you try to look it up, it's like you gotta have the specific wording just to find what you're looking for, because otherwise you're never gonna find it. It's like hidden throughout the internet database.
Right.
And here's a question. I don't have it on my list here. This just popped up to my head. There is no other genre, action, comedy, rom-coms, whatever, that provides the level of social commentary as horror. And we bring up Jordan Peele. We could all agree that his social commentary on racial equality and so on and so forth, that's what he's putting on the forefront.
Yes.
Now, the question here for Timothy and Dawn, when an author submits a work and you read it like, wow, the social commentary on this is like amazing. We got to put this forward. Is that something that comes across your mind when you read the content?
Oh, absolutely. We had a book come out the end of last year, and he had some social commentary in his book, and I didn't agree that it should be changed. Our editor at the time, thought that it should be changed. I did not agree with that, but at the end of the day, the author decided to go with her suggestion and he changed it. I think it would have been much more powerful had he left it. You know, I can only try to, you know, tell him I didn't think it needed to be changed. But and I think that's great. I mean, I think authors should always say whatever they feel like they need to say, you know. as long as you're respectful about it and not just, you know, blatantly racist or any kind of thing like that. It's important, and, you know, and it's important for authors to be able to say what they need to say in their stories.
Right, because we know when you read a book, our mind portrays the imagery that we're reading. So if someone conveys a message on pen and paper, it's going to be totally different. We know this, that if a movie is made out of that book. And to convey a powerful message, it's very, very crucial. And the whole point of this part is, any authors out there, don't change your writing. But yes, do seek a good editor to edit out anything else that needs to be, you know, grammar or structure, or so on and so forth. But the overall content of what you're expressing, that's, don't always trust your gut.
Yes. He went back and forth about it for a few days. At the end, he ended up deciding to go with her suggestion. I still to this day feel like it would have just been better overall if he had left it. Can't win them all.
That's one of the things I said earlier. We look at this as a from the eyes of an author. When it comes down to the editing process, they do have a say. We're not going to take anything out that they've written and, you know, force them to change it. Or now it might be better written a little differently, and we'll suggest it, but it's always up to the author and the to withhold, you know, the integrity of their work. And same goes for other aspects. Paul said earlier, he had a problem with one of his covers. We want the author's input on the cover as well. It needs to represent what they had in mind and how they see it, their book looking. And if, you know, I always say, if our authors aren't happy, we're not happy. So
it seems like it's a very intriguing, elaborate process when you onboard an author to DT Publishings, and then from there putting them onto the blockchain. Correct?
Yeah, a lot goes into it. A lot, very time consuming. Wouldn't have it any other way. We definitely want the author to feel comfortable and to understand what's going on, how this is delivered, and, you know, what people can do with it and what they can expect from it.
Great. Paul, any closing questions before we put Tim on the spot again for the final question?
My final question would be, what is both of your goals for the D&T NFT business of content wise of what type of statement are you guys trying to say with it?
Overall?
Yeah, overall. Yeah. Sorry. Yeah. Like what's your overall mission statement of it?
Well, our slogan for our company is speak your words through truth and deeds. And I mean, that's basically what we try to do, is just, we want to spread the horror genre. We want people to be able to read good books, be able to buy good art. We want our authors to be happy. We want them to be successful. And that means us as a publishing company, we have to learn new things. We have to learn new technologies. We have to get into new areas. And that way our authors can all profit and get, you know, have more success from being able to try these new things. And, you know, technology is always changing. So in that respect, you have to change as well, or you get left behind. So we're just trying to do everything we can to make sure that DNC's around for a long time and that our authors are kept up to date with all the things that can benefit them.
And that's, and if I may say, that's a great way to have your authors have a voice of their own as well.
Cool. And the final question before I relay it for our very special guest, Timothy Shea and Don Shea. Paul, I want to put you on the spot before I deliver the last question. What have you learned today with the NFTs and everything else that we have discussed? How's your perception of it?
I'm going to still need to digress this whole episode as a whole again. So, otherwise, from what I have listened to before, I had to, you know, go off and do a couple of things where I didn't get the chance to, you know, listen to everything that was said. But I feel like I sort of have a better understanding of NFTs and how the creator can get more of control over their content versus putting it onto something like Kindle or Amazon and completely get screwed of their work through changes or something else, I may say. So I guess that goes back to, I just need to re-listen to this and really take in the, all the information again without any distraction.
Yes, it is. It is a long process to learn. It, Timothy, it took you 6 months. About myself, it took me that long to digest all the information, find out what's the difference between Polygon and ETH and Cardano and all the marketplaces, OpenSea, Foundation. Now we have Voice. There's so much to digest. It doesn't happen overnight. And once you get all that information, I would suggest anyone, just go into Twitter, go into Twitter spaces and listen to those in the community and what they have to say. It's a robust community of artists, musicians, painters, photographers, and everyone. The pros there is everyone's there to help. Of course, you would have the occasional negative, but don't focus on that. You got to have that anywhere. You got to have a lot of positive people that will give you proper information. Listen. Don't say anything, because when we want to learn something, we got to listen before we ask questions and absorb all the information and become well-versed in this new field.
So I just want to touch on something that you just said, Ken, because I just want to make it more of a point there, where if people are going to bash on what you are doing, then that's where you have to challenge them and say, okay, I want to see you put in your own time, money, sweat, blood, tears into creating something original, if not a platform for others like D&T here, and, you know, making it success and getting it out there, whether it be your own work or others' work or both, like D&T is doing. It's a great way to network, and the people that just want to bash on it, well, then just challenge them. Have them go out there and make their own film. Have them go out there and make their own book. Have them go out and make their own business then. And you know what? Once you start challenging them, they shut up real quick.
That is so true. It's easy to criticize. I mean, creative criticism, sure. You and I have done it, Paul. We've reviewed films and we've given our points of view, our critique. But there's a difference between critique and just outright criticize. And I agree with your point, Paul. It's easy to criticize. But again, you have to figure, and everything you said, Paul, I'm lazy. You're doing something successful. I'm going to bash on you because you're being successful. That's just outright jealousy right there. Just that's how I see it.
Exactly. I see it. It's kind of like one of my favorite quotes, and I think it's an unknown quote, but if you don't want to work for a solution, you have no business criticizing.
Ooh, I like that one. See, learn something new every day. I like that. That's the quote of the day for today. But Tim and Deborah, here's the final question. Well, that's not really a question, but here's the chance for you to say everything about your business. Where can we find you? Your website, Twitter handle, anything else you care to offer? Here's the chance. And also, any shout outs that you want to do for those in the NFT community that has helped you along the way, positive impacts. Floor is yours.
Thank you. You can find us on our website, which is dntnfts.com. It's dntnfts.com. Check that out. It has a lot of information about our project, has links to our Discord. We'd love for you to jump in the Discord, meet our authors, chat with them. They love to communicate with readers and aspiring writers or authors. So you can do that. You can find us on Twitter at TSHEA1978. That's where we are most of our days. And yeah, so our project is bringing and integrating authors into Web3. We want to offer a great piece of art. We have an amazing artist. His name is Anderson Leo, and he puts together an image full of details from each book. He includes a digital author signed copy of the book in the art, as well as we put sound on it to create an atmosphere. We want y'all to already have a feeling about the book before you start reading or listening. And we feel like he does an amazing job at doing that. These, if you would like to pick up or check out the NFT, you can visit either one of those the website or the Twitter, and there are links to our OpenSea. One of the things we want to do is keep it cheap. So it's priced at 0.0075 Ethereum on Polygon. So we got rid of the gas fees, and that right currently that's about $7. So for $7, you can get the ebook and the audiobook, as well as some cool cover art, and jump in Discord, talk to the author about it, tell him what you think, ask him how he was inspired to write it. Mark Taus is an amazing guy. The title of the piece is Gone to the Dogs. And yeah, I think that about covers it. And thanks for having us.
Well, thank you for your time, to both of you. It was a pleasure to meet you guys and check out what's going on behind the realm of the NFTs and what you guys are creating for everybody.
I'd like to let Dawn tell you about the traditional side. She, we have our main website as well.
Our website is dntpublishing.com. The and is spelled out. You can find us on Facebook, Twitter, Instagram, TikTok, all under DNT Publishing. The and is spelled out. And I post on there every day, most of the time twice a day. And I keep up to date with all our new releases, anything we have going on with DNT, new author signings, all that kind of stuff. When we do a cover reveal, I post those, and you can sign up for our newsletter there as well. And we have exclusive stories every 2 weeks in our newsletter.
Thank you. Thank you for all that information. Thank you for stopping by, talking about your publishing business, talking about NFTs in general, and how it has benefited your business concept. And to everyone listening, do check out DNT Publishing. Follow them on Twitter. If you're an author and you need information or want to have that one step forward into publishing your work, do reach out to them. It's been a pleasure, and I will definitely be seeing you, Tim, and the NFT community and Twitter Spaces. Fantastic insight on everything that you're doing. You revealed being parents and working and doing this business and bringing it up off the ground. That is great. I love that, and I commend that as truly, truly epic, and very proud of you guys taking that leap forward. As with any business, we need to take that leap forward.
Thank you.
Great to hear.
And for everybody else listening too, I just want to say real quick, make sure you're always keeping your eyes peeled to windows and keep it scary.